Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Living Your Life by Design, a conversation of self, health, and wealth. And now, your host, certified career consultant, life coach, and author, Kathy Holloway Hill.
Good evening, listeners. This is Kathy Holloway Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
And I apologize for that little blurb. There was a little tiny bit of technical difficulty there, but we are on track now, and welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us, whether you're dialed in, whether you're going to join us in the chat room, or listening to the archived downloads. Thank you for joining us this evening. We will be ending out our April series with the Get Motivated theme, and then we'll be continuing it on into the month of May. So I am really excited about that because this has been a fantastic, empowering month. So we will continue right on into May with this exact same theme because there are so many people who need to be motivated. So our guest tonight is really, really, really good, and I can't wait to hear from this gentleman. He has a great book that's out. But before I get to that, Tony, I want to ask how you're doing this evening.
I am blessed. I am having a wonderful day. It is a good day. It's beautiful here and ready for the show.
Outstanding. Well, that's good to know. Yeah, we're smack in the midst of spring, so it's really pretty here. This weekend is Derby weekend
here. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right.
Yeah, so we've got a big weekend coming up here in Louisville, Kentucky. And I'm looking forward to that. But I also wanted to make an announcement for next weekend, the weekend of Mother's Day in Indianapolis. I will be, well, not hosting, but I will actually be speaking at a weekend retreat. It's a Mother's Day conference and weekend retreat, and it's going to be at Light of the World Baptist Church. Right, Light of the World Baptist Church. And if you want specific details, I have put the web address in the chat room, so please visit www.harvestgirls, that's H-A-R-V-S-T, girls, with an S, .webs.com. And there are lots of details there. It's going to start on a Friday evening, and it's going to go through the entire weekend, and it is going to be fabulous. You're really going to enjoy yourself. There are going to be spas and massages and workshops and just everything to just fill your soul up with empowerment. So please join us for that because I will be there, and I am really looking forward to that. So that's all I have to announce. Tony, do you have anything?
No, nothing at all.
Okay.
Nothing.
Okay. All right, great. Well, just to have your presence here is wonderful. Well, our guest this evening, I want to go ahead and bring him on the line. His name is Mick Quinn. And he's an Irish immigrant who fully embraced the American dream. And I tell you, I am very, very excited about this individual. But the title of his book is called The Uncommon Path. And I want to hear more about that. But what really intrigues me is that in his bio, it states that his life, Mick's life, was irreversibly transformed in the summer of 2001 as a result of a powerful awakening, and I can't wait to hear about that. So I am going to bring our guest for the evening on the line. Mick, if you're there, can you hear me?
Hi, Kathy. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for joining us.
It's Tony, right? Tony, how are you?
Yes.
I didn't expect to be too. It's great to have you on also.
Thank you very much. Nice to have you on the air.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes, we're very excited in your book. It sounds like a great title. And you heard me as I was doing the intro. I'm very intrigued about this transformation that you went through in 2001. So I'm going to let you just give our listeners a little bit more about who you are, Mick Quinn, and if you want to talk about
sure.
that, I definitely want to hear about your transformation. So the floor is yours.
Sure. Well, I emigrated from Ireland in 1986 when most of my friends were coming over to the States. You know, of course, they were coming back with these great stories about how wonderful it was, and I decided to join them. And long story short, I think it was in 1993 when I got my green card, because we were living illegally for a couple of years, so that was kind of fun. It's interesting times. And I moved down to Manhattan and started a number of tech companies, and two of them did really well. They ended up being multi-million-dollar operations, which eventually ended up getting sold. Now, at the same time as starting these businesses, I was studying Eastern philosophy, mostly Tibetan Buddhism, and I was doing a lot of meditation practice. And I think it was in 1999, I met a teacher called Andrew Cohen, who's based in Massachusetts. And I studied with him for a couple of years, and that was in 2001, actually, right before 9/11, I was on a meditation retreat in the south of France, and I had what's called, you know, traditionally called an awakening experience, or a Kensho, or a Daikensho, or a Satori. I mean, there's lots and lots of names. But basically, it's the experience of self beyond thought, beyond emotions, beyond the body. And, of course, these experiences come and then they go. But there's a residue or a wave that's created when if anyone's listening who's a practitioner of meditation, there's a wave that's created. And I returned to New York right prior to 9/11 trying to decide what to do with the rest of my life. And, of course, 9/11 happened, and that was where I had my coaching practice at the time, which, you know, all fell out of the sky. So it was kind of interesting timing, which led to about 2 years of, let's say, deepening practice and maybe a little bit of chaos. So I decided to move back to Europe and begin to continue to practice and also begin to write about my experiences on the path, and this is what led to the book, To the Uncommon Path. So that's a really short summary of the last 20 years or so.
Excellent. Outstanding. Well, I actually love that title. I really do like that title. And I know you have done extremely well with the book, so I'm excited about that as well, because, as you know, Mick, we really need as many spokespeople as we can get for this topic of empowerment and motivation. And I mean, we live in a world full of mediocrity, and that's just not what our Heavenly Father wants for us. I mean, I don't understand why it's that way, but I just know a lot of people settle for just the status quo, and they just won't push outside their comfort zones. They just don't
right.
want to push outside their comfort zones. So.
Right. Well, you know, Kathy, it's a lot of times we, you know, and this is something I speak about in The Uncommon Path, is we're born into a particular culture, and we will absorb the values and the beliefs and the ways of being of that particular culture. And, you know, sometimes if that includes a little bit of mediocrity, or if that includes a particular belief system, then we accept this as who we are, and sometimes it's very difficult to grow beyond that.
You still there, Mick?
Yes, I'm still. We're actually having a thunderstorm in the area, so that's what's causing the crackling on the line. So
oh, that's okay.
I hope the line doesn't drop. If it does, I'll call you guys back. Don't worry.
Absolutely, no problem.
So
you're absolutely correct in stating that. And you know, you mentioned a little bit ago. You mentioned meditation and. You know, I teach a class at one of the local universities, and so I'm learning quite a bit about, you know, well, I'm also pursuing my master's degree in psychology, so I'm learning quite a bit about how our mind works. And
yes.
I recently was explaining to my students how the subconscious doesn't know the difference in a vision versus reality, which is why when we envision and when we anticipate something painful, let's say we anticipate a negative outcome of a situation that's getting ready to happen next week, that's why our heart starts beating fast and our palms get sweaty, and because our subconscious doesn't know that it's a vision. It thinks it's happening now when we, you know. So when we carry those kind of thoughts in our head all the time, it ingrains a negative image in our subconscious, and then our behaviors and our actions just align with it.
Well, I have a section in the book, in I think it's in chapter 2, where I actually deal with the subconscious, and I take more of the Freudian or Carl Jungian approach to what they call shadow, which are the aspects of ourselves that we have denied. And I think it's really, really important that this work is brought to the world, because a lot of times we will have let's say we're experiencing a pretty emotional turbulence,
which we all do.
Now, if you look at the teachings on shadow and what Freud and Carl Jung were speaking about and others since, of course, they were saying that a significant majority of the emotional experiences that we have, or a significant number of our emotions, are actually a reflection of our own shadow, or a reflection of the parts of ourselves that we have denied. Now, this can be both good and bad parts. Like we can deny anger and confusion, but we can also deny, as you were saying, potential or clarity. We can deny the aspects of ourselves that can take us beyond procrastination or take us beyond mediocrity. So this is a part in the book, and this again is another reason why it's called The Uncommon Path, because I attempted to blend together some of the finest teachings that have come out of the self-development marketplace over the last, say, 50 years, and this is one of them, that we actually begin to pay attention to our ever-shifting emotional states. Because in meditation, we're taught to pay attention to our thinking, the thinking mind, and to try and have some objectivity on the thinking mind. But we've never really been taught to pay attention to the arising emotional states and to begin to identify which of those emotions are showing us, as you said, are showing us our subconscious. Because if we're running on our subconscious, that literally means we are running on unconscious motives. We are making choices based on an aspect of ourself that's out of view. And if we're doing that, we're running blind.
We absolutely are, Mick. We absolutely are running blind. And when I actually started learning these principles and started teaching these principles, I've been a motivational speaker for quite a while now, so, I mean, I understand the emotional aspect of it, but when I started tapping into all of the research and the scientific information behind the subconscious mind, it really was an awakening for me, because I do understand how this whole process works, and I do understand the importance of meditation and visualization, but it did open a whole new door for me. To know that,
right.
And that's actually one of my aha moments, was that we are running blind. I mean, because actually it says 73% of our behaviors and what we do, it's 73% is from our subconscious, which is a little scary.
That's an interesting number that you mentioned, because I've studied the work of Ken Wilber. Are you familiar with his work? He's an American philosopher from Denver. And he gives us a number of 90%. He says that 9 out of 10 emotional responses that we have to external stimuli. Now, an external stimulus could even be a thought, but it's easier to look at it as another person or a life situation.
Ninety percent.
So that's 17% on top of what you're saying. So we're in the same ballpark. So it's an amazing exercise to actually watch your emotions arising and come to the agreement with yourself that 90% of what you're seeing is reflecting a part of yourself that you have denied. So, and where this came from, there's a very interesting story about Freud went to see a stage hypnotherapist or hypnotist act early in his career, and the hypnotist had hypnotized a member of the audience and had given him an umbrella. And as the performer continued with the act, the gentleman was on the back of the stage, and he was opening and closing the umbrella several times. And Freud was more interested in what the guy was doing than what the performer was continuing with. And afterwards, the performer asked the person on the stage, he said, "Why were you opening the umbrella?" And the man on the stage said, "Well, I wanted to see where it was made, or I wanted to see if it worked, or I wanted to see what was the color of the inside of the umbrella." So Freud realized that this man had very genuine motives for what he was doing, but they were all completely false motives, unconscious motives. So this is where he began to discover that when we have shadow, what we do is we see it in other people. Like we will say, we will to try and get rid of our shadow, we'll say, well, he's an angry person, or they are inconsiderate, or life is difficult. What we're really saying is that I'm the one who's angry. I'm the one who's confused. I'm the one who's difficult, because life is just reflecting back the aspects of ourselves that we have denied. Now, of course, shadow, as I said, contains both good and bad. So included in shadow can be all of our potential, all of our joy, all of our passion. Right? We can put all of these things away. So the way to spot them is by just simply paying attention to your emotional experience and then owning that as it comes up and not trying to either deny it again or to push it away on somebody else.
Excellent.
Now, Mick, I wanted to ask, when you talked about your awakening and Kathy mentioned the meditation, that's something that a lot of people don't really take the time to do, take the time to sit and listen to their emotions, take the time to kind of focus in on those things that they need to get themselves together. Can you talk a little bit about that journey for yourself, looking why it was so important for you? Because so many people don't take that time, and anybody who has studied the mind, as Kathy is now, and that you have, and you talked about Freud and what he did, it's about taking the time to realize and use the exercises of getting to that enlightenment. Why was that so important to you, so that some of our listeners can maybe take that same kind of journey or at least be interested in it?
Well, Tony, that's a great question, and there's an entire chapter in the book. It's one of the four insights. It's called the Third Insights, and it really explains why and how we really should take the time to sit and pay attention. Now, in Zen, they don't really call it meditation, they just call it sitting. And that's literally what we're doing, right? What we're doing is we're taking a position of physical stillness in relationship to the movement of the mind. Because as you and I know, the mind's always moving, right? It never stops. As soon as you wake up in the morning, it just starts and it just seems to go all day. And then even sometimes at night, there's dreams and you know, you wake up with all sorts of emotional states. So the mind's always busy. So one of the purposes of meditation is you are saying to yourself that you are no longer intimidated or afraid to sit there and be with who you are. If that includes a busy mind, that's totally fine. So in meditation, what we are practicing to get in touch with the part of ourself that is actually witnessing the mind. It's not actually the mind, right? Who you are is not your thoughts. Who you are is not your emotional experiences. They're included in the experience of the self, but they're not entirely who you are. So you are in meditation practicing the strengthening the witness or strengthening the observer, so that at some point you can actually have some objectivity on the mind. So when thoughts come in, you can create a different choice. Now the choice is, do I go with this particular thought or do I not? Right? There's no longer this let's say, blind identification with I am my thinking. Now, a very simple example of that, if let's say if we took four teenagers, right? We take one from Madrid, Spain, one from Algeria, one from New Delhi, and one from Atlanta. Put them in the same room together. It's very likely we'll have a Catholic from Spain, a Muslim from Algeria, a Hindu from New Delhi, and maybe a born-again Christian from Atlanta. Now, the identity with those particular beliefs have really nothing to do with the essence of the individual, has more to do with the geographical location where that individual was born. But sometimes the conviction becomes so strong that these people can't even interact together. So in meditation, I mean, that's a simple example. In meditation, what we're doing is we're looking at all of the ideas and thoughts and beliefs and limitations that were given to us, that we picked up because of what I call in the book cultural conditioning, because of where we happened to incarnate, where we happened to be born. And where we eventually, with sufficient practice, we actually get in touch with a part of ourselves that is full and complete, has never been born and will never die, is absolutely content in the moment. And there's lots and lots of books about this in the spiritual marketplace. And this is the position of the witness or the position of the observer. We are completely okay with whatever is going on. So when I was in New York and starting businesses, I wasn't a very happy individual. I thought in the early days, if I came to America and made lots of money, that everything would be fine. But you know, that doesn't work. And right. So I was driven to meditation out of suffering. I was suffering mentally and emotionally, and I didn't seem to be getting anywhere in life. You know, I was just ended up making more money and having more contacts and traveling more with that. And that's wonderful. I'm not denying that. But I was driven to sit and observe. Now, what happened in France in 2001, that was a long-term meditation retreat with this teacher, Andrew Cohen, who's quite an enlightened individual. And I remember sitting there, we would do 1.5, 2 or 2.5, 3 hour meditation sessions. So these were pretty long meditation sessions. And the type of meditation that I suggest, it's called stillness meditation, where you actually quiet the body. So there's absolutely no movement of the body, not even swallowing eventually. And what happened was, sooner or later, you begin to be able to, let's say, allow the awareness of the body to disappear. You're not really sure, like, where exactly your knees are on the floor. So, but you're aware you have a body, but there's really, you're not aware of body's somatic sensations anymore. And then you begin to go beyond the emotional states. You begin to go beyond even the thinking mind. And at some point, you become aware of, or I became aware of, fullness, or if you want to pick the other school of Buddhism, just emptiness. So there's an observer observing simply emptiness or simply fullness. Now that's called in meditation, right? It's called a causal experience where it's still dual because it's still I observing emptiness or I aware of fullness. Now it's a beautiful and ecstatic experience, but at some point what happens is that the observer and the emptiness, or the observer and the fullness, will merge. Now that's a non-dual experience, and in that state you realize who you are beyond even this world. Now that was the experience that really shifted the ground for me, because when you come back here you don't see this as your life, you don't see this as your, it becomes very transpersonal or personal plus. I use the word impersonal, but it sounds very cold. But you come back here and you begin to see yourself as the process of life itself. Like, it's not me living my life. It's I am life living. And this is what really empowers people to take responsibility for themselves, for their families, for their town, for their country, and more importantly, for the world itself. you actually begin to accept personal responsibility for the future of humanity. This is the ultimate empowerment. Now, you can call this enlightenment, but then there are many, many, many levels of enlightenment, which we can talk about if you wish. But essentially, to get to or to realize this empowering state, the practice of meditation is essential. It really is.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Fascinating. It really is.
It is extremely fascinating. And let me see, I've written so many things down here. Nick,
you're scribbling notes.
I'm thoroughly intrigued. I am thoroughly intrigued because I am fascinated by the workings of the mind. And our minds are so powerful, and there's just so much that we don't totally understand about the whole process. But I kind of want to go back a little bit to what you said about yourself. You were driven to meditation from suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to talk about that because there are so many people, especially my listeners who listen to my show, because I receive tons of emails daily from listeners who talk about their experiences and their suffering, and they have no passion in their life, and their emotions are out of control. So from your place of suffering, how did you make the determination to cross from that place of suffering into a place of meditation? What was that midpoint that got you from the suffering spot over to begin the meditation?
I've never really been asked that question before. So let me think. So you're asking what got me from what was the original spark?
You were in a place of pain. Obviously, you were in a place of pain because when you suffer, you
got
have
it.
Pain.
Got
so
it. Okay.
In that place of pain, how were you able to pull up out of that pain and say, "I've got to meditate"?
Oh, I remember this well, and this is an interesting story. You guys are familiar with the movie What the Bleep Do We Know? Remember that indie movie about quantum physics explaining consciousness
yes.
a couple of years back?
Yes.
Okay. Well, the guy who produced that movie, Will Arntz, was my first meditation teacher in Boston in 1992, I think. Now, I was in such a dark place at that time. That one night I was living in Boston in the city. I was doing my laundry. There was a laundry downstairs in my building, a public laundromat, and somebody had put a poster for meditation on the notice board, a nice big shiny beautiful poster for meditation class, and I saw it, and I was thinking, well, I've never done meditation before. I said maybe this will help, but I knew that because of how much I was suffering and how unmotivated I was at the time. I knew that if I didn't take the poster and stick it on the inside of my own apartment door for the next 10 days and look at that poster every time I went out the door, there was no way that I would be able to motivate myself to show up at that meditation class. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. And I actually felt kind of guilty because it was like, I'm taking the poster. Maybe somebody else needs to see this poster. But I knew there was no way that I could do it. So that poster was stuck on the back of my door. I still have it somewhere. For 10 days. And I remember going to that class, and I felt something or realized something or discovered something in that class. I discovered that there is something else beyond this, the human condition, that is encapsulated as the human condition, of course, during that meditation class. Now, I'm not saying that it wasn't easy over the subsequent years. Learning how to sit quietly with your own mind is quite challenging. It's quite a challenging thing to do. But I kind of figured out in there somewhere that if I didn't put some effort into learning how to be still, and of course I started to read books on the topic and study as well, that there really was no way out of the suffering. I was just going to get older and maybe accumulate more stuff or maybe get married or something like this. But I was really going to be distracting myself from the really big questions that a lot of us don't ask, or a lot of us are asking, questions like, who am I? What's my purpose here? Does life even have a purpose? How shall I live? Like, how do I engage? How do I express? How do I discover and express my full potential? Like, these are huge questions that I was grappling with at the time. And I'm sure all of us do grapple with these questions in the deepest part of our soul. So meditation for me was one way to begin to answer these questions.
Wow, great. That's a great, great answer. And the reason I ask that question is because that is the place where quite a number of people are stuck. That place where that interim spot going from a place of pain to a place of meditation, or a place of pain to a place of visualization or relaxation or something, action. I'll just,
mm-hmm.
just call it action.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
there has to be something that drives you to the action. And that's why I wanted to know what your experience was, because that is such a difficult spot to pull up out of when you're suffering.
Oh, right.
Yeah, your emotions
right.
are totally out of control. You're suffering. You're miserable. You don't like your life. You don't understand what life's about. All the only questions you have are why, when we
right.
both know that that's not what you need to be asking. You need to be asking what.
Right.
But how do you get from that? So thank you for that, because, you know, once you get
you're
stuck
welcome.
In that mental place, then you procrastinate and you come up with all kind of excuses and reasons why I can't. I love what you did. I love what you did. You took
Thank
that
you.
Poster and you stuck it where you had to look at it every day, because that's how
I had to look at it. I had no
mind.
Choice.
Exactly. That's exactly
no
how the subconscious mind works, Mick. I mean, you just confirmed, because the subconscious mind has to see that image. It has to picture it. The soul works with pictures. It has to see that image, and it has to create that image over and over and over and over again enough times. See, for you, it was only 10 days. For someone else, it may have been 10 months.
Or 10 years sometimes,
exactly.
right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so different people have different time periods, and you know, your threshold of pain, maybe your threshold of pain, thank God, it was only 10 days that it took you to do something. But some people have been stuck in that middle spot of, I'm miserable versus what do I do to get out of this? They've been stuck there for so long. So, and the other
yeah.
thing I wanted to ask you about is I believe that there is a connection with every living human being on this planet. And you mentioned when we realize who we are beyond this world, that to me that was very, very intriguing. When we realize who we are beyond this world. So, in your opinion, does that come from the meditation, or does that come from a combination of things?
Well,
to realize who you are beyond this
it
world.
It probably comes from a combination of things. And, you know, I just want to go back to something that you said there, Kathy, about resistance. And in the book, in The Uncommon Path, Chapter 4 speaks about resistance and being stuck. And what I say in the book is that if we can begin to recognize resistance as pointing the way, often we will shy away from resistance. But what I do in The Uncommon Path is I turn that around and I reframe resistance. I actually call it the grace of resistance, is the title of Chapter 4, so that I try to teach that if we can recognize resistance as pointing the way out of a particular situation. Now, the fundamental theory that I put across is that you cannot experience resistance to something that you're not already prepared to move beyond.
Mm.
For instance, a teenager in Somalia is not going to have resistance to meditation,
right?
Because they're not even ready for that. So
right.
if you're coming up against a resistance to what? To getting out of a relationship, to motivating yourself to do X, to ending a particular career that you have and starting another one, or if you're experiencing resistance to simply sitting still for 10 minutes a day, or if you experience resistance to owning your own emotional states as they're arising, what that means is you've actually already arisen or gotten to that level of development where you're prepared for that move. So I think it's very important to honor resistance as a gift. Okay? Now, back to your question on oneness. It is a combination. It's probably a combination of relatively consistent meditation practice, and also paying attention to your emotions as they're arising. Now, I know I keep coming back to this, but it's really interesting how we can sustain unnecessary suffering in our lives when we're just not aware that when our emotions are coming up, that they actually are a reflection of our own shadow. And this is something that can go on for years and years and years. It really, it's almost endless if we don't include a shadow practice in during our waking hours. And even sometimes shadow comes out in dreams. I mean, that's only the subconscious mind at nighttime. You know, if that big monster is chasing you around in your dreams, and that big monster hates you or is trying to kill you, and you wake up in a fright, what that's telling you is telling you all about yourself. It's all about parts of yourself that you have denied, because that's where the subconscious mind becomes active when you're right. When you're asleep in your dreams, right? You know that.
Absolutely.
So it's a combination, Kathy, of having a meditation practice, a sitting practice. Just literally sit still, be with whatever's happening, right? We're not seeking any particular experience, but that would just be the ego has an image of enlightenment, like it's some sort of bliss state or something like this. It's just sitting still. So that's meditation. Now, when you're finished with your meditation, it's paying attention to your emotions as they're arising, and re-onding that. And if anyone's listening, who if this is, you know, appealing to them, there's a link on my website to what's called the Quinn technique, and it explains how this is possible. So just it's available there. So it's a combination.
Excellent, outstanding. Now, I want to talk a little bit about what you said about resistance, resistance being a gift for an individual to recognize that they are at a place of unrest or a place of conflict or whatever the opposite of peace. So if you recognize that you're at that place, that's a great thing. But I think that sometimes for individuals who are at that interim spot of unrest or conflict, that they are afraid to sit still because they don't want the demons to take over. They don't like their thoughts. They don't like their emotions. And because they haven't crossed over to actually take action, they don't want to be still. So they just keep themselves busy. And, you know, they because every time I receive an email note from someone who talks about this topic, that person, when I email them back and ask them questions, always come back with the same answer. I'm extremely busy.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they are unconsciously creating that busyness. They don't want to sit still.
Well, you know, you said they're afraid of the demons, right? They're afraid of what
their
they might
thoughts,
discover.
Their own emotions.
If they, right. But here's I have a section of the book called Mind Over Body or Body Over Mind, and if you ask any reasonable human being who's been married, has four children, and has a career, if you ask them what's more powerful, the body or the mind, what are they liable to say? Well, they're liable to tell you the mind is more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But if you challenge yourself to answer that question. Right? Is the mind more powerful than the body, or is the body more powerful than the mind? You try and sit still for 45 minutes. You'll find out how strong the body is. Now, who's controlling that? If you can't sit still, completely still, for 45 minutes, it means that you're not fully in charge. Now, you may have a wonderful life. You may be the president of the United States, but if you can't sit still for 45 minutes, who's really running the show?
That's a good point.
Right? Now, the demons are nothing to be afraid of because there's nothing outside of you.
They don't know that.
They're afraid to discover that, I guess. But, you know, it's a matter of interest, Kathy, and it's also a matter of suffering. I mean, what Eckhart Tolle said, there are two ways to come to the path, right? There's the way of the cross, and there's the way of choice. and this is something that I try to put across in The Uncommon Path, is that there are new ways. Over the last 20 to 30 years, there have been some amazing new technologies for self and, you know, big self development that have emerged that are really offering us new ways to make choices. And this is something that I wanted to do in The Uncommon Path, was to bring these out into awareness.
Wow. That is extremely powerful. And as you know, our theme this month is Get Motivated. And the word motivation itself is there's so many different ways that that can happen, because everyone is different in how they're motivated. Everyone's DNA is different. Everyone's personalities are different, and everyone's life experiences are, well, life experiences are meant to strengthen us. So, I mean, everybody has life experiences, but everybody is motivated differently. And some people, I mean, I don't want to say there are certain individuals who just can't be motivated. I don't know if that's the case or not. Sometimes it appears that way for me, because I have worked with certain clients for quite a while, and it just seems like every tool, every method, everything I do, everything I say, they still stay stuck in that spot.
Well, maybe they're at that place. I mean, sometimes it takes a really long time to learn something. I mean, we all have different, let's say, different pace, and we all have a different ability to find new tools and then to embrace those new tools or those new technologies and then to begin to express those. So I guess we're all on a different track in a way.
Our pain threshold is different. Our pain, because some people have a
very large
pain threshold, and they can tolerate that misery and that unrest and that conflict within themselves. They can tolerate that for years and years, and not realizing,
right.
Nick. And the other part that is very of interest. Our concern, I should say, concern for me, is that when you tolerate that level of conflict within yourself, that it does start to affect your body physically.
Oh, it can. It can. I mean, this is something that, you know, Ken Wilber has made quite clear to us, that there are four irreducible aspects to reality, and one of them is what you're speaking about there. It's the physical realm, and of course, like a particular way of thinking or a particular set of beliefs can manifest in the body. Of course, that's quite normal. But I think it's also important to really put across that there is hope. Right, there is hope. If there's resistance, if there's suffering, what this is pointing to, right, is there's a message coming down from, or coming up from, or coming in from, right? I don't want to give a directionality here, from that which created this universe.
Mm-hmm.
So 14 billion years ago, something came from nothing, and there's a message there for each one of us, and the message is to wake up to the potential that is buried deep within. And that message, more than often, at least in this particular era of humanity, comes across as resistance and suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So if we look at that as that's our sign, like that's our sign, that's the gift that life is giving us is suffering. It's giving us resistance. Now, if we run away from that, now how do we run away from that? We run away from it in careers. We run away from it in, honey, let's have another baby. We run away from
it,
need a summer house, right? We run away from it in
drugs, alcohol, comfort food.
Hey, there you go. There you go. There's another way, right? Now, again, this may be just this particular phase of humanity where we have all of these things available to us, grand distractions from our ultimate purpose here. But it's all good news at the end of the day. It really is.
You know, and
oh, go ahead, Tony. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, because what's so amazing is the fact that when you mentioned, Kathy, you mentioned about, you know, what people run to and run from and use to deal with the pain. But when we sit still, when we meditate, when we are able to recognize the message in the mess, when we're able to understand and get the enlightenment or understand that pain is taking us to a higher place, if we sit still, then it'll come. And it's what's so amazing to me is it is that complicated, but it's also that simple. And that's the greatness of the tools that have been given to us, because it's all within us. We just have to be able to recognize and utilize what's been given to us so we can come up with the solutions. And I love the fact that
so many people act, absolutely.
But so many people will sit and say, I can't. And it's not designed for them not to be able to. They just have to stop running from themselves and recognize that the answers are right there.
And Tony,
you said it. Yeah, sorry. Go ahead, Kathy.
Okay. No, well, I was just going to say that is so true, and I wanted to add to that because, you know, that statement, I can't, I think that creates a mindset of, oh, I'm just a failure, I can't do it. And people need to realize that is beating yourself up. You must stop beating yourself up. Just like we've been talking about in this discussion, there is no set time frame, there is no set specific motivational tools. Everybody's DNA is different. Everybody's pain threshold is different. We need to stop beating ourselves up, because if you recognize it, as Mick said, recognizing the resistance in itself is a gift. That's great. That's fantastic. Don't beat yourself up and say, oh, I haven't acted on it yet. That's pushing you further down when you beat yourself up and tell yourself, oh, gosh, I can't do it. Don't do that, whoever's listening.
Well, okay, a great point and great advice, but what if, Kathy, let's consider the possibility that we have no choice in that matter. Let's consider that the subconscious, that the shadow, is driving the whole thing, and that even though we want to stop, even though we have the best intentions, New Year's Eve, I make five New Year's resolutions, and by the 6th of March, I can't even remember what they are, right? This is a very common experience for people. So let's assume for a second that, and again, this is something else I try to put across in The Uncommon Path, is that the part of us that enjoys suffering, and there is a part of us that enjoys suffering, it's called the ego, right? It's called the aspect of self that defends individuality, right? It's been there for about, 4,500 years in human consciousness. It just loves to suffer, and that's fine. But let's say that we, with our best intentions and with our let's say our purest and highest desires to stop suffering, that we simply can't, that we are simply unable to do it because we are just not aware that shadow is driving the whole process. Because no one has ever said to us, look at your emotions and own them. She is not angry, I am. He is not a jerk, I am. My mother-in-law is not difficult, I'm the difficult one. Owned all of these parts of ourselves that we're trying to push away and create some peace within. And then you can empower that intention to change or to sit or to get out of that relationship or to go beyond that job or to find your purpose in life. But it starts with that simple exercise of paying attention. It's meditation in the waking state. That's what shadow work is. It's meditation in the waking state. Because I've met, the same as you, people who have these amazing, amazing intentions. And you work with one particular technique with them, but it's just so difficult or sometimes impossible for them to actually sustain change. Then we begin to look at their emotional states. Sometimes that's very difficult. Sometimes that's very difficult to say that everything that I'm looking at, life is reflecting who I am. Can you own that? Can you own that? And it's not until you do own that you will begin to see your intentions to change, to grow, to evolve, being empowered.
That's very, very powerful. When we change the way we look at things, the things we look at change.
When we change the way we look at things, that's true. You can hang upside down and everything looks different, right?
Exactly. And you know, it's just all about, I, I'm really interested in what you said about meditation and the waking state. Where can I – okay, oh, wow, we're coming up on our last 10 minutes. I didn't even realize that, but this has been a great conversation.
Time flies.
I know. Where can – what's your website, first of all, Mick? Because I want people to be able to get more information about this meditation and the waking state and the shadowing and all this information.
Sure.
Where's your website?
Sure. The website, Kathy, is – it's my name. It's Mick Quinn. That's MickQuinn.com.
Okay.
And on the website, again – I'll just mention the Quinn technique, which is this process of that allows you to reintegrate shadow as it's arising, which
mm-hmm.
basically just ends emotional turbulence during the day. And on there also there's details about our coaching program, and there's a link to the book, because we do a lot of work similar to yourself with people around the world who are interested in conscious evolution. So it's mickquinn.com.
Excellent. And where
Thank
can
you.
Individuals purchase your book, The Uncommon Path?
I think the best place is to visit your local bookseller, or as I said, it is available through the site on or from Amazon, and you know they'll ship it out in a couple of days.
Okay, excellent. Well, you know, Mick, this has absolutely been a very awakening experience, very enlightening, very empowering, very motivating. A lot of great information that I learned quite a bit this evening with this discussion about clarity and meditation and the awakening state and how to cross from that place of pain over into that place of action. And all of these things are so very important in how to begin the process. And as you stated, just the resistance in itself is a gift. So everyone listening to me, just understand that if you're resisting right now and you realize you're not happy where you are and you're in conflict internally with your emotions or your life or your situation, that's a gift. Embrace that. Be happy about that, because now all you have to do is just find the strength, and you have it in you. You have it in you. Find the strength to move to that place of meditation, move to that place of whatever works for you. Meditation is great. But if there's something else that you feel you need to do, then get out there and do it. And I'm not going to tell you what that is, because there's lots of different things out there. There are lots of different choices to make. So I don't want to put my beliefs onto you. I'm just saying move from that interim spot of turmoil so that you can start living a life of peace. And, Mick, I'm going to go ahead and just let you have some closing remarks, because I'm really excited and thrilled that you've taken the time to share your insight.
Well, Kathy, again, thank you for having me on, and you know, I think the essential point that came out of the call today was there is a way forward. There is hope. I mean, part of the reason why I wrote the book is that I was stuck for many years with a lot of the traditional self-development models that are available. And so I decided to look at that and see what was wrong, because there was a blind spot there. And my honest hope with the Uncommon Path is that we can awaken not only for the sake of our own selves, but for the sake of humanity, because the world is definitely in need of a little bit of help. And I think it needs more individuals who are less focused on themselves and more focused on other people to move things forward.
Absolutely. Beautiful, beautiful. Tony, you have some closing advice for our listeners? Tony, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm sorry. My phone disconnected. I was just saying, if there's anything, I just want to really kind of mimic what you guys are saying. More than anything else, inside the pain or inside what you're going through, there's something that will get you through if you recognize it. Kathy, you've always said this to the listeners, and we've had many discussions about it. Sometimes it's the lesson that you have to go through the pain. On the other side of that pain is the enlightenment. On the other side of it is the growth. On the other side of it is understanding who you are and who you were supposed to become. But if you didn't go through it, if you weren't able to understand it and recognize it and take the time to sit down and do that, then you would have missed a tremendous opportunity. And imagine what that means when you become a better person for not only yourself, but for the world. I mean, if everyone tried to live their lives to make everyone else and the world better, imagine how great this country and this world would be.
That is so true. That is so true. And I believe we see the world as we see ourselves. And I know we touched on that a little bit in our discussions. And I believe that's what makes us who we are. And believe means to be loved. So love is the foundation of everything that we do and accomplish in our lives. So if we can just learn to love ourselves, then that's going to help us cross over that threshold from a place of conflict to a place of meditation or whatever your choice is for taking action to get yourself out of that spot. So I don't think we should get stuck on, oh, I can't and I shouldn't and I could have and I should have and would have. We shouldn't get stuck on that because people feel like failures are just, it's the end for them. And there is no failure. There are lessons. There are lessons. There's no blame. There's only redemption. So if we could just keep those thoughts in mind and understand that everything that has happened to this point in your life is a blessing. It's a blessing, especially the fact that you've recognized where you are in this resistance. A gift is going to come from that. So we want to thank you guys so much for joining us this evening, and I hope we have said something and given you some food for thought so that you can think about how you want to change your life and how you want to gain that clarity and how you want to move to a higher level of being, because the world needs you. The world needs you very badly. We are all in this together. We are all connected. And we need to realize who we are and why we are in this world, why we were placed in this world. And it wasn't done by accident. So thank you so much again, Mick, and thank you.
Thanks, Kathy and Tony. It's been a pleasure. Pleasure
absolutely
to be here. And good luck.
Thank you. Thank you.
And again, Mick's website, I just posted it in the chat room to make sure that, you know, everyone has an opportunity. I encourage you to please visit his website, which is mickquinn.com. And please, by all means, purchase a copy of his book, because I absolutely love the way Mick comes at it from a different perspective. Everything that we have heard from so many different, there's tons of teachers and empowermenters and so many people out there who can help us, coaches and mentors. And I love the way Mick came at it from a different perspective tonight. So please, 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 purchase his book. I think you will be very, very happy with that. So with that, we are going to continue our Get Motivated theme next month, starting the month of May. We're going to continue it from April on up into May, and I think you're going to be very pleased. Continue to join us. We are so happy to have you. We're going to sign off for now. I am Kathy Holloway-Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
And we absolutely will see everyone next week. Thank you guys for joining us, and have a blessed evening. Good night, everyone.